once again to the Soccer OG. Hey, that's me, Max Bretos. Episode 197. As always, a reminder to rate, review, download, subscribe, tell a friend of our pod. Check out the Soccer OG on YouTube under my name, Max Bretos. New videos coming out every week, sometimes twice a week, so you can listen and watch. Exciting show ahead is some breaking news coming out of Europe that La Liga and Javier Tebas says that games from his league will be coming to the United States as soon as 2025-2026. So we just couldn't wait to talk about it here on the pod. This is a topic that affects so many and changes the landscape of the world of football. So we are going to dive right in head first. Joining me in the business end, from The Guardian US, Aaron Timms, who wrote an article that I certainly recommend that you check out that is up right now, titled, "A US Premier League Game Would Be Wildly Popular and Demean Everyone," says what he means. And he'll be joining me in the business, and we'll talk about it from both sides of the pond, how it affects the English game, the American game, how it affects the Premier League, how it affects Major League Soccer, La Liga, and why, whether it's a good idea or not, how we find a middle ground to try and please everyone, and how we can help make sure it doesn't go overboard. Man cannot live on bread alone, so we'll also talk a little USMNT. Check complete, Serginho Dest out long-term. Horrible news for the player who has been excelling for PSV Eindhoven, but the U.S. men's national team has a big tournament coming up this summer. We will get into the possible options, replacements for Serginho Dest while he gets his speedy recovery on, we hope. This is the Soccer OG. It's great to be with you. Time now for the rundown. I am a big fan of the topical pod. I don't do a lot of them here because, well, I'm a little bit scrambled and there's so much good soccer and football going on that I gotta try and touch on everything. Maybe it's a problem. Maybe, but it is what it is, and this isn't going to be a topical pod, although I'm going to lean into it about 75% because of this bombastic news that Javier Tebas says not that we're looking into getting into the U.S. market with games. We will be there in 2025-2026. The discussions with Relevant Sport, among some other entities, to bring European games specifically, although it wasn't just European games. Remember, there was a time where Relevant was trying to bring an Ecuadorian game to Miami, bringing games from the exterior to the United States for a very hungry fan base that not only wants more soccer, they want it from everywhere. And clearly, these leagues have seen the United States as their top market outside of their own. They have said as much, and it's hard to argue with them. This is the United States. There's 330 million people here. And even if 5% like soccer, which I think is the number, that is still huge. So these leagues want to get a bigger piece of the pie. We have been seeing it with the soccer world going on and on with regards to that. FIFA is investing big in the United States with the World Cup, the Club World Cup. The Copa America, not a FIFA property, is coming here as well. So much going on. Gianni Infantino visited here, the United States, spoke to the MLS Board of Governors. So the U.S., at least for this stretch, is front and center. But that's not going away. FIFA knows this is the big growth area. And there is a demand. There's no doubt about it. But there's a lot at play. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Serginho Dest. I want to talk a little bit about what I did this weekend. But we will delve into the exporting of European games. And, you know, it's about La Liga because that's the news that broke today. But the Premier League is really the big one, right? That's the one that people want to see. Because the Premier League, which La Liga can't do, which Serie A can't do, every game there almost feels important. People tune into Manchester United and Liverpool, but they'll also tune into Sheffield United, Crystal Palace. Not in huge numbers, but enough. Enough to draw a decent number. So that is the big one. So we will talk to Aaron Timms here shortly of Guardian US and get his thoughts about it. Because while I see the progress coming and I invite games from Europe coming in here, you know, we talk about the 39th game. I invite that, and I think it whether I like it or not, it's going to happen. I think the American audience wants to see a high level of football, albeit it should be one of some of the top teams. I don't know if they'll get that initially, but the question is, will they get it eventually? And when they do, what does that do for the European game? And they're aware of it. This is a delicate situation because while, you know, the NFL, you know, I've spoke to a lot of people, or I've been exchanging tweets and that kind of stuff. But I've had conversations with people, and we know the NFL is exporting games, and Major League Baseball is going to Korea and Japan, where there is a demand for baseball. And there is a demand for American football in Germany and England and Mexico City. I mean, those leagues are trying to grow, but it's not, as Aaron will point out too, it's not what soccer has. And the appeal of what we want to see is, it's not just the product on the field, it's the product in the stands. It's the culture that has been created that, for me personally, I would rather go overseas. Granted, I'll be spending a whole lot more money to see a game in England than see one here at, whatever, you name it, MetLife Stadium. So it's interesting, but I think we've got to prepare ourselves for it. It could get pretty messy. I wouldn't underestimate the English public, because remember when the Super League came out and they voiced their opinion and that thing got shut down quick. And I thought the Super League idea would come up multiple times, but it hasn't. So that's a powerful source. So we'll get into that with Aaron. I don't want to eat up too much of the conversation here, but it's a really interesting topic. There's so many different ways to look at it. It affects everybody. It affects everybody. The good news is that this could be that breaking point where, you know, soccer's growing in this country. There's no doubt about it. The United States I'm talking about. And we're always waiting for that next big uptick. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is the one which takes us into the stratosphere. Did want to touch a little bit about my weekend. It was not lost on me as I got to do my MLS duties. I did the LAFC Red Bulls game Saturday, and Sunday I did the LA Galaxy and San Jose Earthquakes. It was incredible, and you got to see, you know, from both sides, because we don't have what they have in England, but in LA it's as close to it as anything, where you have two major soccer clubs inside a city, separated their stadiums, what, like 15 miles? You know, I live pretty close to the Galaxy Stadium. I'm in Redondo Beach. It's in Carson. It's a short drive for me to get to LAFC. I take the toll road. I can be there in 20 minutes, maybe less. 20 minutes. I'm not gunning it. I don't want to get in trouble here. So it was brilliant to see it. I don't know how many opportunities that are like that. Obviously, I work for LAFC, so it was a little odd. I used to call games for the Galaxy back in the day. I respect both of them. It was great to see the Galaxy Stadium full. And I've always said this to everyone. What will make this sustain, what will make this grow to a level where this matchup, when they play, could be a rivalry, a derby, that you start to mention with some of the big global ones. I know it's not the Derby della Madonnina, which was we saw this past weekend, and you know Inter really stamped it and won their title. Interesting to see that there. I have always said that's the best rivalry because the two teams are in the same city. And to me, that separates it. That's why Celtic Rangers, that's why Boca River have a leg up over, say, I don't want to insult anyone or get anyone upset, Man United, Liverpool, or Real Madrid, Barcelona. The two in the big city, when you couple that with the history, to me, Inter Milan, Milan Inter is tops. So it's subjective, I know. But, you know, the two teams in LA, and if that builds and they are successful and they can help raise the standard MLS, that will be at the top of the list here in the United States without question very soon. I think it's probably almost there as it is. And it'll resonate in parts of the world. Not globally, but certainly in Mexico. You know, there's a growing group of players that have played in these teams, like Zlatan and Chicharito and Carlos Vela and Hugo Lloris is there now and Gareth Bale and Giorgio Chiellini. It takes a while, right? It takes a while. Our league is in diapers. It's 27 years old. It's not 120, 140, 150 years old. But, you know, I think about my grandkids or their grandkids and the soccer world that they will be stepping into. So we have that. There's a Premier League midweek. There's also, it's good to see Arsenal hanging in there, Chelsea's obviously the club that's drawing all the ire now. Arsenal have got, I think, as I'm recording this, a four-point lead over Manchester City, but they have two games in hand. But I still think that's a comfortable feeling because Man City knows they have to win these games. If they do anything but win those games, then Arsenal and Liverpool can get back in the title race. Certainly Arsenal's doing their part. Looked fantastic. And Drew, you know, showed the fact that Chelsea have more issues than we ever could have imagined. Much like the FA Cup game. Oh boy, I didn't want to get into that with VAR on Coventry City, Manchester United. Again, topical. Let's stay focused, Bretos. Let's stay focused. So we have that, and we have the CONCACAF Champions Cup. The Columbus Crew Monterrey first leg game may happen before you hear this pod. I still think Columbus has a chance to get through there and still win this tournament. So we'll see what that means for Major League Soccer. Again, see, you see what happens? I'm trying to focus on one thing and then it gets bigger. But we will focus on those two main topics. Coming up, the exporting of European games to the United States. It's closer than it's ever happened because of what's happening in the courtrooms, because of what was mentioned by Javier Tebas in La Liga. Aaron Timms of Guardian US joins me in the business, and stick around afterwards in Check Complete. We will talk what the United States men's national team needs to do at right back to fill the void of Sergio. We're back now into the business and a topic that is very timely. Very excited to be able to roll up our sleeves and discuss it. And that is, I guess we call it the exporting of European soccer games to the big market, the big secondary market for a lot of these leagues. I think that's the way the Premier League looks at it. That is the way that La Liga has explicitly said it, with Javier Tebas says the U.S. is our second league. So what's going to become of it? Because it seems like it's happening. And to discuss that is Aaron Timms of Guardian U.S., who has recently written an article that I recommend you guys check out. A U.S. Premier League game would be wildly popular and demean everyone. And Aaron, I want to point out to everyone, you're an Aussie, so this is not an old English fan who's like digging in his heels saying, hey, don't take our games. You're kind of like me, appreciate the Premier League from afar.
Absolutely, yeah. And I love innovation, as long as it's good, of course. And I, you know, like many fans, of course, I like live sport as well. So there are lots of different perspectives that I bring to this issue that will hopefully generate a fruitful and interesting discussion, right?
That's what we're looking for. But look, right. I'll preface this too, because, you know, working for Major League Soccer, and we, Don Garber, the commissioner, has also been an opponent of that, and he's said as much about it, speaking through the fans' perspective, and you can take that for how you like, about fans from that country should be able to watch their leagues and their teams as they do it. We in the United States, and you preface this as well, and I always remember when the NFL was shipping out home games, because I would say back when it started, I go, the Premier League, which they talked about this 10, 15 years ago, fans would have never greenlit that, and they never did. And you could see what they did with the Super League. When things about change come in, they protest and they have a voice. Right. And I was like, I was a little disappointed about the American sports culture that they so willy-nilly said, oh, you have eight home games. We're going to ship one out.
Right.
So a foreign group could see it.
Right. Well, I kind of raise this point in my piece at the beginning, where I say, you know, for American sports, I should preface all of this by saying I do live in New York, so I'm on U.S. soil and have lived here for more than a decade. So this sort of whole perspective that I bring to the issue is colored both by the fact that I'm Australian and have sort of lived my whole life observing the Premier League from afar, but also the fact that I'm in the U.S. and kind of am marinating in soccer culture in the U.S. at the same time. You know, the U.S. sports is a little bit like Australian sports. The U.S. sports still have this sort of issue of trying to expand their global reach, even though, of course, the U.S. market is so huge. There's still like an evangelical aspect to a lot of American sports, right? Like, you want to kind of grow the sport globally. Basketball is obviously, I think, probably the most sort of powerful global U.S. sport now. But football, soccer, doesn't really have that problem. So there's no real need to take these elite competitions on the road. I just don't sort of see the cultural argument being as strong for soccer or European soccer as it is for American sports. So, so there is that slight distinction. And there are lots of other issues with kind of holding a 39th Premier League match in the US. One thing I don't mention in the piece, which I think is really interesting, is kind of how it would work logistically, like how you decide who you're going to be facing in the 39th match, because it obviously can be extremely unequal. It can benefit some teams and really hurt others. If you're facing Manchester City in your 39th match, you're obviously not as happy about that as you would be if you're facing Luton Town or whatever. So so there's all those types of questions. But yeah, I think it's interesting the way it's become now this real talking point, and it's kind of risen out of this the settlement of this lawsuit between Revenant Sports, which is like a sort of sport promoter, and the European Football Authority, FIFA, to basically say, well, from now on, we're going to reconsider this longstanding FIFA policy of containing domestic league matches to the countries in which those domestic leagues are held. So it's kind of all open for discussion now. And as you say, La Liga has come out today and indicated that they not only want to revisit this, but actually do want to hold matches in the US. So it's all happening.
And I know the folks at Relevant. I've done some stuff with them, and they've been at this for some time. I respect the hustle, I guess, because they see it. Being in the United States, I know it will be successful because there is an appetite for those games, because we see it in the summer friendlies. I sit there 50, 60,000 to see, and these games are awful. These are not competitive games.
Right.
These are like 60,000 people watching a kick around. You're like, okay, and there's no urgency because this is their preseason.
Yeah.
There is an appetite. I mean, I was one in San Diego, Manchester United in Wrexham. And, you know, Wrexham has become this phenomenon. There's like 20,000 people in Wrexham shirts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the idea of where it'd be successful, I think it certainly will.
Totally. The commercial case is so clear, right? I mean, you know, you see the numbers of people who show up for these Premier League fan fests and things like that. I mean, you know, they'll be sold out within, you know, an hour or something. The commercial case is very powerful, I think.
It wouldn't be a case where they'd come in and go, all right, maybe this doesn't work. Let's keep it within these gate within our stadiums, because by the way, with the Premier League, we could focus on that, but obviously La Liga is involved and Serie A has had these games in Saudi Arabia, these cup games. By the way, do you think that is a way to wiggle around it without handing out league games? If there's other kinds of games, cup games, Champions League final, perhaps?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, maybe not quite the Champions League final. Well, maybe. Like, I mean, why not? But I think maybe a more likely scenario is that you'll get kind of the carve outs of the sort of second tier cup competitions like Spain and Italy have done, where they've sold the hosting rights to Saudi Arabia for both of the Supercoppas in each of those leagues. Or you'll have some kind of NBA style, you know, in-season tournament thing that kind of takes the place of a winter break, although now they've done away with that in the Premier League. I could definitely see sort of a carve-out competition. But I'm not sure that it would still be successful. I think as we've established, the thirst for kind of live European football in the US is so strong that you could kind of throw out sort of under 17 teams, and I think you'd still get pretty big crowds. But I'm not sure that it would have quite the same sort of appeal as holding a real kind of, you know, points on the line Premier League match or La Liga match in the US, where it feels like there's real stakes. If we're kind of getting the crumbs, it doesn't feel quite the same to me.
But with regards to that, it's the a competitive imbalance is a big issue too. Like you pointed out earlier, where it could, you know, it could alter a race, and then who knows the Pandora's box that opens up with
that. Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen that obviously over the past few months with all the PSR stuff, all the different kind of claims and counterclaims that are coming in from different teams. Like, I mean, the Premier League sort of dismissed, I think, all the claims from the teams that were affected by Everton's Everton staying up last season. You know, they're all like the Leicesters and the Leedses were all kind of trying to be joined as parties to that particular investigation, and the Premier League said no. But I think once you, once you introduce this kind of, you know, wild card essentially of a 39th Premier League match, you do invite a lot of, you know, scrutiny and discontent from different teams in the league.
With regards to FIFA, because that's the issue. I mean, that's the block, right? That was the block to not this happen. And now they've kind of changed their policy. What do you think? Why do you think that happened? Why do you think FIFA kind of said, all right, well, maybe not move away from that their stance, but maybe soften it a little bit, which has given Relevant and some other other entities that opportunity and La Liga to pursue these kind of games?
I suppose it's just the general direction of travel in European football, as we've said with the Italian and Spanish league sort of selling cup competitions to Saudi Arabia. So it's kind of difficult to sort of hold off the barbarians at the gate, if you like. And because there's so much institutional money coming into European football, there are all these stakeholders that FIFA has to satisfy now. It's not just they're not sort of impartial stewards of the game. They also have to speak to the money men, if you like, and satisfy them. It's not something that I agree with or like or want to see happen more. But I think the pressure from sort of the moneyed interests who are coming into the sport and who are kind of, you know, who basically pay FIFA salaries, I suppose, in a roundabout way. Means that there would have been, I think, a lot of structural and institutional pressure, cultural pressure on FIFA to relax that rule. And you know, it sort of, as kind of sanctimonious and I think a little bit two-faced as it is, it does speak to their core mandate of growing the game or whatever, and making sure that they have sort of a foothold for soccer in the US. I mean, just the interest in sort of getting a foothold in the US. I mean, it's always been the case for soccer, I suppose, but, or especially over the last 50 years, let's say. But in recent years, especially as US institutional money has gone into European soccer in a way that wasn't really happening previously. And it's kind of a phenomenon of the last 25 years, let's say, with the Glazers really sort of kicking it off in the Premier League. You're now in a situation where, almost half, or maybe it is exactly half of the Premier League teams are owned by US interests, US individuals or US funds. So the thirst to kind of crack the US market. I mean, it's already cracked, of course, like soccer's already huge here. And as you say, it is for the European leagues, the US really is the second market now. Just in terms of the money that the broadcast deals attract and all that kind of stuff. So, I just think it's like, well, we've got to be in America. You know, we've got to be in America more America, more European soccer in America. So,
it's nice to be wanted as an American. Come on, I'm kidding. Oh,
no, I'm sure. And like
tell me, tell me more.
I don't. You know. Of course I want to see a live Premier League match. You know, I've actually never seen one. I've never been to the UK to watch a live Premier League match. I've been watching this league and sort of taking this sort of morbid, obsessive curiosity.
That's been good enough. That's been appealing enough, because I'm kind of the same. I've been to some, but I enjoy sitting down and watching these games and seeing the play.
Right.
And everything around these Premier League games on a Saturday or Sunday morning.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I suppose you do end up having a slightly different culture here as you're sort of watching it from afar, and you sort of tell yourself different stories about sort of what Europe is and what European football is, and the types of personalities that gravitate to the game in the US, that gravitate to the European game specifically, I think maybe a little bit different from, you know, sort of what constitutes fan culture in Europe. So there is something like a little bit, there is something unique and special here that I don't want to disturb by kind of holding the Merseyside derby in Philadelphia or whatever. So, you know.
I think there'd be a lot of resentment. I mean, I could already see like the Liverpool Everton fans looking at if they were to export a Merseyside derby game, which I don't think that's on the table, but who knows, as a domino effect.
Yeah.
Because, look, honestly, Aaron, I would say, and it's Aaron Timms of Guardian US joining us here in the business end on a topic that I think everyone's going to be talking about more and more. And just to your point about FIFA expanding, particularly in the United States, it's not just the World Cup in 2026. Yeah. It is the FIFA Club World Cup in 2025. We have the Copa America, which FIFA is loosely connected to, is going to be here in 2024. A Women's World Cup, I'm sure, is going to follow. So this is a big window. And Gianni Infantino was here talking to the Major League Soccer owners and basically saying, hey, with time to take off the training wheels, let's really do it, because obviously they have a big stake in here and they want to kind of be part of this evolution, this important stretch where not only does the sport become big in the United States, but it becomes one of the big sports. Right. And I think they're looking at every resource with regards to importing these games as well, even though MLS, and I think wisely, is doesn't want to split it, because, I mean, Aaron, I don't know if you're aware, but, you know, sometimes with this domestic league, which is important in the growth of the league, absolutely, a lot of American fans say, I'm an MLS supporter, yeah, or I'm going to support a team in England or Spain or Italy. And there's no gray area. It's not, I do both. It's kind of one or the other. And I mean, that's a big business decision, really, at the end of the day, because and I don't blame them, because we don't have enough time in the day to supporting multiple clubs.
Yeah, exactly. There's just so much. There's so much soccer to watch. It's like you've got to choose your battles, kind of thing. But yeah, I completely understand why MLS is sort of opposed to this. I've been called out for this so many times by my editors. The MLS, no, it's MLS.
Dude, but what's a quick fix there, by the way?
I know. Like, I'm traumatized by years of writing about this stuff. So. You know, I understand, because, like, from MLS's perspective, they're saying, well, we have, you know, I think they have a very good argument to say, we have the best league outside Europe. We have the strongest league outside Europe. We have extremely, you know, extremely high quality players who are coming to play in this league. And we serve as this, you know, I think very powerful magnet for talent from Latin America. You know, why should we sort of share the live sport limelight, live soccer limelight with the Premier League? Of course, the Premier League would say, oh, it's all additive. We're all helping each other by sort of raising the profile of the sport in the US. And that, I suppose, is a, you know, decent argument. But, I think this push to kind of bring soccer into kind of the conversation where it's on par with, you know, football, basketball, baseball. I think it's definitely kind of edging hockey out of the way. I think that's a very powerful motivator from the US side for bringing these games over here.
I would like to preface this by saying I support the 39th game. And I think we're so far along that it's going to happen. And I would love to, and I know that the demand for it is, and I want these American sport fans, because they're going to pay for tickets. Me personally, I would save my money, jump on and go see my West Ham Hammers play a league game at the Olympic Stadium and make a big trek out of that. That's how I would do it. But I understand that, you know, by the way, those tickets will probably be very expensive to see a Premier League game. I'm okay for the 39th game. But I can understand that everyone would feel this is just the beginning. And one minute they'll say that, you know, like you said, maybe they'll send out, it'll be Everton and Crystal Palace, which may not move the needle. But then eventually it could be a Merseyside derby, or it could be Manchester United, Liverpool. Is that, how deep of a fear is it that this, you open the tap and then it keeps pouring?
Well, I think from the English side, that is the fear, is that, you know, you kind of lose the connection of the teams to their communities. And I mean, you brought up Wrexham before. I think Wrexham is actually kind of a powerful example of how you can bring in the US and kind of maintain the connection to community in a fairly convincing way. But I'm not sure that every team is going to have, you know, the caliber of celebrity owner that Wrexham has right now. So I'm not sure that you can kind of make the argument that this is sort of a model that is replicable across, you know, the football pyramid in England, and certainly not for Premier League teams. So yeah, I think there is a real fear in England that you're just going to kind of sell out the game in a very general sense to corporate interests and just go wherever the money is. So eventually, you know, you'll have half the season being played in Saudi Arabia, you know, a quarter being played in the US, and then sort of the remaining quarter in the UK or whatever. And that's not a future that I would like to see. I think that, you know, if this is going to happen, you know, it really does need to be contained. The sports are only going to survive. These leagues are only going to kind of remain powerful, I think, as cultural forces if they maintain their connection to their, you know, ancestral, you know, headquarters, to their home base. The moment that you kind of have this kind of, you know, kind of uprooted, globalized version of Everton FC, I don't think it's the same club anymore. You know, like you kind of lose a sense of what makes a club special, what gives it its identity, what sort of sets it apart from other clubs. And so, I agree with you. It's probably going to happen. You know, there's just sort of such, so much money behind it. I think so much interest on the behalf of the leagues in doing this type of thing that it probably will happen. But I hope it doesn't happen too much, I suppose.
Well, the Premier League's, I know this is a bigger thing than the Premier League, because it looks like La Liga is this race to beat everyone. And I think it's smart for La Liga to see if the Premier League is going to have some problems getting that game to beat them across the tape. It's a good business decision. And that's the league that needs.
They need the money more. They need the money more as well.
100%. Again, if it's Granada Eibar over here. And you know what? This crazy thing, Aaron, is I think fans would come out. If it's marketed well enough.
Yeah.
And it was Granada Eibar at Jerry's World in North Texas.
Yeah.
I would not sit here and say that, okay, it's not going to resonate, but it will.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, of course you look at the Hispanic fan base here, which is extremely robust. I think there's a lot of interest in La Liga. I mean, La Liga is still, of course, the preeminent destination, I think, for players from Latin America. It still sort of seems to be the league that they want to go to most. I think it would be a huge success. And you're right. I think that now that La Liga has said this, I think it's going to set in train, you know, a competition among the elite leagues to sort of have the US leg. So I would not be surprised to see, you know, Ligue 1 come out, or Serie A or whatever, Bundesliga. Maybe Bundesliga can do all its matches, you know, in the Midwest or something, where all the Germans are. But you know,
and they would do well.
You know, Ligue 1 would just be in sort of Quebec. But you know, but I think, you know, I think for all of these leagues, you know, bringing these matches out would be extremely lucrative.
But the interesting, the Premier League, which has changed so much over the last 20 years, even it was, you know, the by and large, the coaches were English, the players were 70-80% British,
right?
And that's the way it was. And now that's adapted, where you have the best coaches in the world, you have the best players in the world, you have the most eyeballs. And even through that, then just a seismic shift where it's become the best league in the world. And I include the Champions League in that. The Premier League is the best. Every game has stakes. It still maintained its identity.
Englishness.
It's English. And part of me wants to take that because I'm envious and I want to take it. But I know that it would undermine the whole thing, because that is a testament. It's the best. I mean, the English have exported so many great things. This is, for me, they're number one. But granted, I'm in this field.
Right.
But it is. And it's benefited now, because these young English players are getting better because they have all this great coaching and great teammates. But through all of that, it's still Goodison Park, Everton. It's still.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I was going to say, I thought you were going to say from a parochial US perspective and from my sort of parochial Australian American perspective, don't we want England to be just a little bit weaker? We want to weaken the league so that we want to weaken the league.
Yes,
so,
but no.
It's not so good.
I see these things about Kenilworth Road and I go, I'm like, oh, that's pretty freaking cool.
Right.
But this exists that doesn't really exist here. And we can't, I don't want to take that away.
Well, I was also going to say, I think a lot of the sort of the durability of the Englishness of the league is actually down to the match day experiences and the stadiums. Of course, the stadiums are changing. You're getting, you know, the bigger clubs are sort of either upgrading their stadiums or building whole new stadiums. But even in a place like Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which is new, you do get that sort of classic English atmosphere, you know. And I'm not sure. I think you lose a lot of that by, you know, taking it to AT&T Stadium or whatever in Arlington, Texas, or MetLife Stadium or whatever. It's like you lose a little bit of that, yeah, not even a little bit. You lose a lot of that texture to the match day. The fact that, you know, you've got to, from a sort of New Yorker's perspective, you've got to sort of take three different trains across three different networks or whatever to get to MetLife Stadium from where I'm sitting right now in Queens. You know, that kind of sucks. And it does sort of spoil the atmosphere of the actual match. I think, you know, there's nothing often for a lot of these stadiums. There's not really a lot around them. It's not like an English stadium that's sort of baked into the town or the city. So yeah, I think you will lose a lot of that if you bring matches over to the US. Now, of course, it's totally survivable if you only do one match a season. But if it becomes more than that, then yeah, I think that does really start to, you know, eat away at the sort of the English core of the match day experience or whatever.
Yeah. And I remember when it first came up 15 years ago, and like the idea of like losing a home game, and they said, that's a non-starter. It's not happening. So the 39th game came up, and it's interesting, but it's such a weird thing to have the 39th game, as I said, and competitively and how it would look. I think we could somewhat sweep that under the rug because you can get that game there, but I think the fear of it growing is the big problem. Yeah.
And also, I suppose, like, how would the fans behave? I wonder. Like, it's interesting you brought up this division between American MLS supporters and American sort of Premier League or European soccer supporters. You do get this thing. So I go and watch, if I'm not watching at home, I watch the Premier League at a bar in Brooklyn. And you do get this sort of particular subspecies of American supporter who like pretends to be English during the match. And he's like doing all the chants in an English accent and stuff. And, you know, to my ear, it's kind of a little bit sad. It's like, just be proud of who you are. Like, just do it in an American accent. So we're going to have sort of thousands of these people sort of doing the sort of Bukayo Saka chant or whatever at the 39th Arsenal match being held in Los Angeles or whatever. It's like, I don't know what it would give as a match day experience. And from a selfish perspective as a TV spectator, I want to hear the real chants. I want to hear the real thing. I want to see the real thing on TV.
But to your point, it's amazing that English culture is so overwhelming that it can make someone 5,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Flatter, like, dupe, imitate. Yeah,
2 hours a week, I'm going to be English.
I wouldn't hear the end of it from my wife, but I probably have to avoid that. But I get it. And look, the Wrexham phenomenon is something else, because people through this TV show are supporting Wrexham,
right?
A team in North Wales. Yeah. And I have so much respect for being able to do that. But and by the way, to the point here, and I've been that guy. I've been West Ham. I have my scarf, and I'll chant and I'll sing. I'm forever blowing bubbles.
Right.
But I fear the level of the ridicule, which is going to always kind of separate us and the English when they rolling into that stadium to support that 39th game. I could already feel the eyeballs in the ears of the English public or shaking their heads going, what are they doing?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and of course, we don't want to be purely motivated by what the English think in life. But
right, you know, sometimes you can screw them. You can say screw them, but hey, it's their baby. We're holding their baby for a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, it does kind of raise the question of sort of who owns this sport and who owns this league, right? Like the Premier League has just turned into this global juggernaut. And I think I can see things from both perspectives again, like, I understand why sort of traditionalists and the hardcore fans or whatever don't like kind of outsiders intruding on the sport. But at the same time, there is something kind of weirdly xenophobic about that. And also, the global expansion of the game is something that has been pursued, you know, very aggressively by the Premier League itself. Like, this is the future that the Premier League wanted. So there does need to be, I think, some ground given, you know, culturally, structurally, institutionally, whatever, to the overseas fan, because we are now, you know, a very big part of the Premier League's success. So I think we need to be sort of heard in some way or kind of taken account of. And often in these conversations, it does sort of turn into this, you know, well, where, you know, we're, you know, the Evertonians, we're the Scousers, where we live on Merseyside, we kind of decide everything. And I hear that argument, but at the same time, you know, there are people all over the world who love these clubs. And it would be nice sort of to have their opinions heard occasionally. I don't think it's going to happen, but whatever. I'm just saying.
Well, and look, for the different American interests that want to watch this game, and you mentioned the globalization, I know a big chunk of them may not even support these teams, but what we do in the United States, they want to see the best play. And yeah, we saw this with Messi coming over, but for the idea of them to see Erling Haaland or Mo Salah or Bellingham for one of these games is very appealing. I am on board for that. Right. And that's unfortunately, 10, 20 years ago, bringing Premier League games that have been, but I think to see that, I can understand that, but yeah, it's, but that may not be what you're getting, but I understand, but the opportunity to get that, trumps all here for them.
It's so powerful. Yeah. It's like, and this is the sort of, as you say, it's the whole kind of Into Miami project. It's like bring over sort of the highest caliber of player possible, which I agree with. Of course, we all want to see good players doing sort of spectacular things live. Like as good as the TV experience is, these days, there's still no substitute, in my opinion, for like going to the actual stadium and watching live sport. There's just something very cool about that you just can't get off a TV.
Well, Aaron, great having this conversation. We'll see where this direction goes. But I mean, once we exchanged emails and I was like, okay, between that time and now, it has snowballed even more.
It's already evolved, yeah.
So everything happens very quickly in our soccer space, which is changing so quickly every day, which I embrace. Sometimes it's hard to let go of some of those traditions, but sometimes you can't stop the progress.
Absolutely.
Aaron, appreciate your time, man. Great conversation. Hope we could do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
All the best.
All right. See ya.
Stick around now for Check Complete. We're going to talk about what the U.S. men's national team will do to replace Serginho Dest out long-term with injury. This is the Soccer OG. Time now for Check Complete, and awful news for the U.S. men's national team. A long-term injury for Serginho Dest. Picked it up during training with PSV Eindhoven. From what we are hearing, it seems like, and we're recording this in April, that he'll be out for the rest of 2024, which is huge. And, you know, I think we immediately think of what this means for the U.S. men's national team. But you stop and think about what is for Serginho Dest. I don't want to sound insincere, but that's the nature of sports. And injuries are a reality, and injuries are really disappointing. But I think when you look at Dest, who has been so maligned, playing for these big clubs, Barcelona, Milan, and for him to find a perfect situation where he gets to express himself, where he gets to play in huge games like the Champions League knockouts, which he did. And for this to happen, it sucks. It's just, you just wish, you know that injuries are going to come, but for this circumstance, because of everything he's had to overcome and finally make that breakthrough and be the guy he wanted to be for club and country, it's a very bitter pill. So we wish Serginho, if he does listen to the podcast, maybe he does. We are listened to in, 140 different countries. So we wish him the very best in a recovery. And PSV are saying all the right things, and they want to keep him there, and hopefully they make him whole. And, you know, 2024 is such a big year. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but, you know, there is 2026. And the good news for Serginho Dest is as we look for the replacements, I don't think there is one. He, on the surface, is one of the most irreplaceable players we have. You go through that list and, you know, Pulisic is at the top. Gio Reyna would certainly be there. But, you know, if we had a midfield of Adams, McKennie, and Musa, which we had, you know, during the World Cup, I'm okay with that. We Anthony Robinson, I think we have a little more cover on left. Well, not really. And he is so good, but he doesn't do what Serginho Dest does. I think there's a good case to be made that Serginho Dest is certainly in the top three irreplaceable players that we have. And a big part of it's because of what's behind him. And it's an interesting question because there are so many different options that you can bring to the table for Dest being out for, which will be the Copa America. So this is going to be the three group stage games and whatever games are in the knockouts. Let's hope it's five or six or seven. Is it seven? Yeah, seven. In this tournament this summer, which is a dress rehearsal for the World Cup and a great show to see how the U.S. might be able to perform in the biggest competition in 2026, although, albeit without Serginho Dest now, hopefully there. So I think the most likely change is going to be Joe Scally. Greg Berhalter hasn't shown a lot of... he's been pretty rigid in the way he wants to play. So if you think we might go three center backs and do some wing backs here to help cover the defensive effort and be more attack-minded from the midfield as opposed to from that right-back or left-back spot, maybe that will maybe that would be the best option. Greg Berhalter, I doubt, will be doing that. So the most likely replacement, and I think the right thing to do, is to put in Joe Scally. I mean, we're all going to hold our breath. Joe Scally, when Serginho Dest was suspended for the Nations League game against Jamaica, Scally came in and was on the hook for the goal, whether it's how much percentage of that was his fault. Different people will tell you different things. I think it was a good size percentage. Some ball watching, what have you. Anyway, it's one moment. We don't crush him for that. But I think afterwards, there was some other issues that you could see in comparison to what Serginho Dest could do, how there's a huge gap there. Well, now we can't worry about the gap because Serginho Dest isn't there. But I think the right thing to do is to put Joe Scally, give him that chance, see how he responds. He's not been playing as regularly as he used to at Borussia Mönchengladbach. He's still a good European-based player, getting great coaching. And I guess you could say that was that one performance against Jamaica that would hinder him. But it's been more than that. And I think there was a couple times we saw him. Was it one of the pre-World Cup friendlies where he got his first opportunity, which he was a baby, so we can't use that. But I think the game against Germany last year, he was there, and it wasn't very good. And I am wishing Joe Scally the best. And if I make my 11, I'm putting Joe Scally in there. So there you go, Joe Scally. Now, the other option that I would... You look at the natural fullbacks. Where would they come from? Brian Reynolds, playing better in the Belgian league, still too young and raw, played in the Copa America. He's not ready to be put in there. But you certainly could groom him. I think his chances of making the squad have improved drastically. So, you know, after that, it kind of gets thin. I mean, DeJuan Jones is a guy who can play either side. I like his flexibility. I would really consider bringing him here to be that extra right back. You know, the other fullbacks after Anthony Robinson was Christopher Lund, who's a left back. Maybe there's some options there, but I think, you know, Reggie Cannon's not really in the mix. He's not playing. So I think there's a chance to, the silver lining is you get a chance to bring Brian Reynolds in. I think it would kind of make sense. And the other options are players who have played right back filling that position. But what does that do? I think if the Joe Scally situation doesn't go well, let's say we give him a half in that opening Copa America game, which is Bolivia, right? I should know this. What if it doesn't go well? But actually, there it is, Bolivia on June the 23rd. If it doesn't go right, then we know Joe Scally's not the answer. But that's a game where Joe Scally should excel. So you don't shake it up too much, right? Because if you bring Tim Weah, which would be the other option, he plays that, had a great assist for Juventus. His best moment coming this past, 2 days ago, since I wrote this on Monday, or Tuesday. Sorry about it, I get a little scrambled. The Tim Weah playing that for Juventus would be a good option. And the problem with that is we're not very deep in wingers. So what does that do? I would say one thing that intrigues me by bringing Tim Weah, and this plays into the scenario where you play your, you bring in your strongest players, right? Because we have a log jam at number nine. We have a bit of a log jam at the midfield. So you can relieve that, for instance, if you can bring Weston McKennie, who did replace, who came in for Joe Scally in that game, played okay at right back, but you take him out of that midfield. But then you can have a midfield of Adams, who is injured, hopefully again, but hopefully okay by the Copa America. You have Adams, Reyna, Musa, and then you can have Weston McKennie there, and you leave Tim Weah as one of the wingers with Christian Pulisic. So you can, that way you bring another top player, I think would be Musa, would be the guy out of the starting 11 if Adams and McKennie and Reyna were ready to go. And you find a way to get those top four midfielders all into your starting 11. I like that. I like that quite a bit now that I've just aired it out. Tim Weah to me is the better option because we need to replace Sergiño Dest's attacking verve. Sergiño Dest is not a great defender. We cover for him a lot. He leaves gaps there, but that is what he's supposed to do, right? He's supposed to get up there. And when he's dynamic and meandering through, he looks more like a winger than a fullback. So that can kind of disguise it. You know, when I talk about this, I think maybe that's what Greg Berhalter will do. I think he does give Scally that chance again. But a lot of time between April and June 23rd. Tim Weah, as that right back, you need to replace one of the wingers. But here you go. You know, Christian Pulisic plays, his best position is the right winger. This would allow us to put him there. And now we have to put someone at left wing to replace Pulisic. And no one's been any better right now. And this is a position he kind of plays than Haji Wright as a winger. We keep considering him a nine. He played as a number nine in the Nations League. But what if we say Flo Balogun's the guy, which he's going to be, and Ricardo Pepi's ahead of the pecking order of Haji Wright. Based on selections, Josh Sargent's ahead of Haji Wright because Josh Sargent was selected for the Nations League, then pulled out injured. So we have to assume that all three of those guys are ahead of Haji Wright. But Haji Wright's playing great. Should have made an FA Cup final. Scoring important goals for Coventry that maybe can come up to the Premier League. If they don't come up to the Premier League, maybe a Premier League team sees what he does and comes in there. What if we, this is all very scary because we've invested so much in this Copa America and ideally we wish Dest was there and we could go with that group, but he's not. So Pulisic on the right, Haji Wright on the left, of course, Balogun in the middle. And then McKennie, Reyna, and Adams in the midfield. Anthony Robinson left back. Ream, Chris Richards, and on the right would be Tim Weah. Doesn't sound so bad. Doesn't sound so bad. And remember, I guess the Copa can be forgiving. We are supposed to beat Bolivia. We are supposed to beat Panama before we face Uruguay. And if we beat Bolivia, and that game will take place at AT&T Stadium in North Texas. And we beat Panama, which will take place at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, which we should. Regardless of what happens to Uruguay, we're going to make the quarterfinals. We want to win that group, but just make the quarters. And that's the key. So we can ease into it a little bit. But this is a huge decision for Greg Berhalter. I have faith in these things. I mean, the issue with Greg is the tactics and how he doesn't really budge on some things. But I think with selections, and not just with the roster, with 11, he's kind of got what everyone wants to see. He gets the best players in there. He did that with Gio Reyna. We weren't sure about that at the time. I think he's done a pretty good job shuffling the center backs, even though we don't have the strongest group right now. And he has made way for some of these young players. So that part I'm okay with. So I think he'll make the right decision. If I had to take a wild guess, I would think it would be Scally to at least get a shot at it. But we will know more. I think Tim Weah would be the best option. But then the third option, because Greg Berhalter put Weston McKennie at right back. I think there's three viable options. Tyler Adams, another guy who could play there, but he doesn't give you the go forward that Weah or McKinney could. Joe Scally doesn't really give you the go forward, which will hinder his chances. So I think you have three viable options. Brian Reynolds comes along for the ride, and that's one of the silver linings for having Sergiño Dest. We're going to have a lot more USMNT coverage. The Copa America is going to be here before you know it. This is the Soccer OG. We cover all the topics. Thanks again to Aaron Timms. We'd love to bring him back to talk about this once this story about games from Europe coming to the United States firms up, because it is going to. And it is really intriguing. And it changes the dynamic of sport. And a lot of people feel like, I see it, like, I don't want these games because I don't want it to interfere with MLS. And Don Garber has said that. I want these games to come here. I want a 39th game. But I don't want to take away from that charm, because the English public, as we said with Aaron, they've earned that. And they have made this incredible product. But I believe there's a chance to have some big games come here without upsetting the apple cart too much. The Soccer OG. Rate, review, download, subscribe, and tell a friend. Check out the Soccer OG on YouTube under my name, Max Bretos. New video about this topic, about games coming to the U.S., will be out Wednesday night. Let's just say Thursday a.m. to make sure. We'll talk to you soon. And until we talk to you again, Plácido Domingo.